Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict, global conflict. I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. We begin in Europe with some of the headlines. For example, in Serbia-Kosovo border region, there's said now to be a dispute that will be resolved in some fashion by the EU, perhaps as early as the middle of August. However, the mediation suggests that the Balkans are not quiet and they are in some fashion unsettled since the late 20th century. I feature the reporting that says that Serbia, especially the president of Serbia, Aleksandar Vučić, is favorable toward Moscow and vice versa. That is said to be a complicating factor in the Balkans. In Armenia and Azerbaijan, the conflict of late 2020 over the area known as Nagorno-Karabakh has flared up again with casualties. I mention this because Russian peacekeepers and Russian mediation was the solution in late 2020. Armenia is part of the Russian influence in the South Caucasus and in Central Asia. Then we come to Ukraine itself, the conflict zone. What we have now is fog of war. There is talk in the Wall Street Journal that Ukraine is about to launch or is already launching a counteroffensive against the Russian forces deployed from Kharkiv in the north to Crimea in the south. There's also reporting, again, fog of war, that the Russians have launched offensives in the north of their area of occupation in order to drain off resources the Ukrainians need in the south. In other words, what we have here is an ongoing battle between statements and men and civilians on the battle space. Now we come to the larger story that I ask Anatole's help with, and that is food security and energy security. A large shipment of grain left Odessa in these last days. There's an article by Admiral James Stavridis, U.S. Navy retired, about the difficulties of maneuvering through minefields, even if you know where they are. In this instance, there's no reporting that anything bad happened to the grain shipment, but all the grain that is in Odessa and other ports needs to get to the Mediterranean basin for the people that need it in North Africa. There is no food security on the planet right now, and energy security is the story that is darkening Europe. I attach myself to a remark made by the foreign minister of Great Britain 100 years ago. The lights are going out all over Europe. That statement seems especially ironic, given that we're told there's turning power, electricity down and lights down in Berlin and taking cold showers. Anatole, that's enough of the headlines. I want to focus on food security and electricity security. To your understanding, is that part of the conversation now at NATO or at Moscow, that Europe is at grave risk in these next weeks? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. The problem about NATO is that it has, over the years, been completely disengaged as an organization from calculations about economics, about economics, about food security, energy security, climate change, the environment. So while NATO actions have, as we now see, have had a tremendous impact on all of these things because of their contribution to the eventual conflict in Ukraine, NATO as an organization never factored any of these things into its calculations or decisions. So we have this rather radical disconnect here, whereby European governments are now deeply worried about all these things. Warnings about impending deep recession, energy rationing, water rationing, deep worries about food shortages and political instability in North Africa, the Middle East. But no collective strategy about what actually to do about this. Now, the one encouraging news is that Russia and Ukraine have managed to agree to reopen grain shipments, and the first ship has gone through. That, my understanding is partly because during the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov's travels to Africa and elsewhere to try to garner sympathy and support, governments there express their deep anxiety about food. And so this is an attempt by Russia to keep, possible avenues of communication open to the West, but also to garner or to retain sympathy and support elsewhere in the world.
I puzzle, though. Let us speak to food security first before the energy security. I puzzle, though, whether this is a calculation that is being taken seriously in all the capitals that are attached to NATO and in Moscow. You say, correctly, destabilization. We already see that. That's underway right now. And there is no confidence that there will be adequate supplies for North Africa right now. This has a rolling ripple effect across the Mediterranean basin. Already, Europe has been sagging under the refugee crisis starting in Syria and spreading through the Sahel. I don't read anywhere alarm bells going off. Do you read it, Anatole? You're in Europe. You see things. You talk to people at Quincy. Is there a scale of concern that matches when people are hungry? They're violent.
There's certainly not a scale of concern that matches the the scale of the crisis and the potential danger of the crisis. I mean, there is concern, but it's limited. Well, as far as North Africa and the Middle East is concerned, it's limited to experts in these areas. And as I understand it, the relevant sections of the European foreign ministries. The problem is, of course, that to try to do something about this would imply an attempt to bring about at least a ceasefire in Ukraine, and it would require the lifting of at least some sanctions against Russia. And at present, nobody is willing to do that. I mean, for good reasons, obviously not wishing to reward Russia for aggression, but also because people are frankly politically scared of the consequences if they break ranks on that. And so, I mean, Western strategy has to a great extent been driven by people who, in the case of Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General, there's no evidence that he has ever given any serious thought to any of these issues beyond more or less, parroting what the American establishment, Britain, Poland say. And Washington appears to me, of course, America is not threatened except by inflation in nearly the same way that Europe is. America is not threatened by energy shortages. America is not, directly affected or to nearly the same extent by crisis in the Middle East. And so you know, and of course, America now has so much on its plate with China as well, thanks to Pelosi's trip. And so there is a degree to which, you know, the West is sleepwalking into this crisis, I fear.
Energy security. I want to start just by naming the capitals that do not have Plan Bs right now, because Russia's Gazprom, it appears, is not going to turn the Nord Stream 1 flow back on or at the level that is necessary in order to provide energy security. Berlin, I've already mentioned, is anticipating cold showers and turning the lights down. I don't know what they do when it gets really cold. I mentioned that there are French nuclear reactors offline now, perhaps because of the extreme climate conditions in France. They can't cool down their own facilities, but also because of maintenance problems. Rome doesn't have a prime minister. London doesn't have a prime minister. I mention all this because prices are spiking even now. So the question is there attention to the fact that this is no longer about the battle space in Donbass? This is about people living on the margins of Western Europe being pushed into poverty or desperation as early as October 1st. Do you see that in London, that the enormous transfer of prosperity is ebbing, that what we have now are conditions that they're not 1945, Anatole, but they're in that direction for the people who have are the least among you?
In England at the moment, you know, the two contenders for the leadership of the Conservative Party and therefore the Prime Ministership are entirely focused on 160,000 people, you know, a tiny fraction of the British population, but who are the members of the Conservative Party. They decide who will be leader of the Conservative Party and therefore who will be the next Prime Minister. Now, to say that their views are, you know, uncharacteristic of the British population as a whole would be a gross understatement. I mean, most of these people, they're not dinosaurs, they're paleosaurs. I mean, in political terms, they're like the creatures that, you know, the amphibians that crawled out of the sea 600 million years ago. And no, I mean, they're not thinking seriously about any of these issues. They are simply parroting, Reaganite, Thatcherite nostrums from 40 years ago. So Britain, I regard as virtually hopeless from that point of view. On the continent of Europe, people are paying much more attention to this, and not just because of the human impact. Well, obviously the human impact, but the threat of recession. I mean, most of German industry depends on gas for its energy as well. So, I mean, we are looking at a very hard winter. But I mean, so far the reaction has simply been, you know, by people like the European Union foreign representative to accuse Russia of blackmail. Well, this is war. You know, if you attempt to help Ukraine to beat Russia through radical economic sanctions, well, you know, in war you can expect massive retaliation, which is what we're getting. I mean, the problem is nobody thought this through before the war.
I'm speaking to Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Food security and energy security are the two reigning themes for Europe, for the Mediterranean basin, and for Eurasia and Africa in these next months. We're going to turn to considerations of what's happening in Russia when we come back. I'm John Batchelor.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.